Welcome to the premiere of the Polycast side series Evergreen. I'm Wouter Snijders, more commonly known as Locutus in the Civilization community. I started this podcast with Dan Q back in 2006, serving as one of the regular co-hosts in the first season. Out of all the topics we covered across the 34 episodes, Dan has selected and ranked the 10 he feels most retain their relevance years after they were first published. Wait, top 10s? He's still doing that? And you're still listening? Alongside this, recurring guest co-host Canis Albinus re-listened to Season 1 in its entirety to select the 10 most representative moments of Polycast, and he ranked them too, with a couple of honorable mentions for good measure. So this is basically an extended, protracted pairing of top 10s of Polycast by Polycast. I have nothing more to do with this than counting down these items, listeners. Which I guess makes me an accessory. Oh boy. Number 10, from episode 25. Asking the question what one has learned, so to speak, from Civ about real life is never short of amusement.
Things you have learned from Civ thread. What I did is I went through the thread and I found top 10 things you have learned from Civ.
Nice.
Remember the last time you did a list when I was on the show, Dan? That was horrible.
Lucky you. You get the follow-up now. What we're getting at here, Defiant 47 says that things in Civ that are the way just because they are or to balance gameplay but are funny when transported into real life. From Snippafest, bears, lions, pumas, and wolves were all united in an alliance against early man. Number 9, from Anorax, from space, France is blue in color.
I think that one's true.
He also gets the number 8 spot. In the history of the world, there have only been 7 good movies. I think we can all think of those. Metallica Guy 10. Units are larger than everything in the game, including the city that has built them and forests. That's true. That's... New York was founded centuries before York was. From Florian. Number 5, I actually came up with one of my own. When warring nations sign a peace treaty, opposing armies typically move out of the other's territory instantly.
Hundreds Woo! Of miles in the blink of an eye. It's amazing.
Defiant 47, number 4, it takes more time to raise a hamlet than to raise a city.
No, <it's... laughs> there's a couple mods that have fixed that, turned that around, but it is odd when you think about it.
Just like when you park on a driveway and drive on a parkway, makes you think. From Florian, to this very day, a ship under a Spanish flag will move a little bit faster than an identical ship in the service of another country because Ferdinand Magellan was working for Spain when he circumnavigated the globe.
This is true.
Defiant 47 at number 2, it is possible to be able to use your money to upgrade a war elephant into a gunship, but to be unable to use your money to create a gunship directly. And number 1 on the top 10 things you have learned from Civ, from Snippafist, conquering armies are renowned for their tendency to build theaters in their wake.
Nice.
Number 9, from episode 21, linking those who play Civilization and those who have an interest in history is one that never goes away.
So, Civilization is history. Are you interested in it or not?
I think I am.
I am also interested in history.
I think everyone who plays Civ is interested in history. It's the reason they were drawn to the game in the first place. I think that generally Civ players are probably a little bit more interested or knowledgeable about history than a general game player. Otherwise, the general game player would have bought Civ.
Certainly, I think people who are interested in turn-based strategy games go to Civ because it's a highly respected turn-based strategy game. And just, I think that people who are themselves interested in turn-based strategy games tend to be far more intelligent and elite gamers than people who want to play first-person shooters, and thus they also are interested in history.
Imran,
I don't know about that one.
I've got to say, it's going to rock both of your worlds. I think you're both right.
Yeah! Co-champion! I'll title for that. So, do you want to elaborate?
If you already have a general interest in history, you come across Civ, mm-hmm. you're going to recognize it as being about history. And we're not getting into the whole discussion about how realistic is it about history. We've talked about that before. But it is about history. So you're likely going to pick it up. At the same time, if, as Ken was saying, if you are interested in strategy games in general or gaming in general, you're looking at new titles coming out, you're looking for a challenge, something a little epic, you will pick up Civilization because perhaps you like the military model. Oh, here's a chance to conquer the world. And then once you get into the game, you might find all the other aspects just as, if not more interesting, than the reason why you picked up the game in the first place. Also, we talked about in a previous polycast about the Civ 3 mod for Canada and the history of Canada. And this version of Civ 3 is going to be, to some students, they're going to be subjected to this, whether they like to or not. And they may find out in the course of playing Civ that they find history or learning about history more enjoyable than they did before they played Civ.
No, no. As soon as it becomes homework, they'll hate it.
Number 8, from Episode 2. Time and again, the question is asked why a given country is not yet in Civ, and whether this perhaps should be the case for Canada is still debated to this day.
The question was, by Will 9, should Canada be in? And if I read the results real quick of the poll he posted, 65.28% say no, 12.50% say yes, and 22.22% say maybe when Canada has the highest banana production. I would say no. Sorry, Dan.
Fat no.
Yeah, I can't even think of a scenario you could use Canada in other than something like one of those.
The War of 1812.
Well, I was thinking like the one I think somebody did for Civ 3 where the U.S. all split up and everybody's fighting over North America or something, but as a main Civ, probably
yes,
not.
I mean, most of the time, they'd be vassals of Britain, really, anyway, as their colony.
Of the U.S.
Yes, well, yeah, now.
You might be surprised by my answer. Should Canada be in Civ, as a built-in Civ? No. If there are Canadians out there who want it to be included as a Civ, change the code, as Verdrago already noted. So that is not what has caused me to write a few notes on this one, the question, but anybody notice how the conversation started off as should Canada be in Civ, and it kind of branched out into just about defining Canada as a nation, period, or how nations define themselves on their own or relation to one another, kind of went a little off topic. Kind of losing the Civ connection there, but
it's for the plus ones. It's all for the plus.
Well, I'm just going to quickly run down some of the comments about why Canada should not be in Civ. And I think these, I said, I agree with no, the end result is the same, no, but how we're getting there. I mean, some of these comments, my goodness sakes. I can't really name a single important historic incident that Canada as one of the major players. How about the World Wars, more the Second World War, where Canada's role was more independent from Britain, and the Suez Crisis? Don't know what I'm talking about, who posted that? Look it up. Moving on.
You can just hear really the anger in his voice. Anger.
I don't get angry. I get
but
even.
Dan, anger leads to fear. Fear leads to the dark side. Or is that the other way around?
Who said he isn't already on the dark side?
That's true. Okay, move on, Dan. Move on.
Luke, I am your owner. There we go. All right. Number two. The really interesting thing is that they seem to be the only nation in the world that can say this. Every other nation I can think of has played important roles in major historic events.
Well, Zimbabwe.
I can think of a few.
Zimbabwe has Mugabe.
Luxembourg.
And Mugabe's a wacko.
Wow. Yeah.
That comment was just kind of roll eyes, okay.
I will say, Canada should only be in Civ if Dan is the leaderhead.
You'd rather be leading of the Apolton nation.
Yeah, you know, other nations that should be included in Civ that aren't.
One hearing really weird noises?
No. Not no. I'm not. You have voices inside your head telling you you need to be looking up something else right now?
Maybe.
The prawn is popping up. That's what it is.
Okay.
Well, we need a pop-up block.
Yeah.
Back to normal now, but...
It seems interesting that you thought about that while we were talking about Canada. Don't see the connection, but... hey, to each his own. As I was saying, nations that shouldn't be included in Civ but aren't, or at least in 4, where are the Babylonians? Where's
Portugal? That's for the next. For the next expansion, I think. I think they're holding out like some big names for so the big expansions looks a little better. I mean, it could be really great, but I mean, a lot of people focus on the new Civs. I mean, let's be honest.
No comment.
But you know, if Canada was to be a built-in Civ. I like the comment about the unique unit being the Mountie, replacing cavalry. That's a no-brainer. But leaders, I appreciate the suggestion that I should be the leader, Hit Imran, but I don't think too many people are going to agree with that. And if they did, that's probably one of the first things that would be modded out.
Oh, come on. Who else would they pick? Pierre Trudeau?
Number 7, from episode 9, making a wrong number a right number, like only Polycast can. With the show's first voicemail, no less.
Polycast got its first call, only it turned out to be a wrong number.
Message sent today at 10:53 p.m.
Hello, is this Martin? This is Clayton. Do you have a mobile number for Cedric? Cheers. And rangers,
one by one. However, I took it upon myself to call this individual back and let them know what they were missing out on.
Oh dear.
Uh-huh. Internet site. You guys are nerds.
He's like, how do I get rid of this guy? Why is he talking to me?
Welcome to the O2 messaging service. The person you are calling is unable to take your call. Please leave your message after the tone. To re-record your message, key hash at any time. The people are the
heroes now. The heroes are the
peasants. Hello? Yes, good evening. Is this Clayton?
Is this?
I've got your number here. I think you phoned yesterday. Were you looking for a mobile number for Cedric?
Oh, yeah. I am, yeah.
Oh, hi. I think you phoned 4420-7871-7659, and you left a message, and I'm sorry, but no, this isn't Martin, so I just wanted to call back and say, no, sorry, you had the wrong number, so you won't get a response to your specific question.
Yeah, I'm Cedric.
No, I'm sorry, I don't suppose you've ever played the computer game Civilization or any of its sequels, have you?
What?
Well, you see, you left a message on the voicemail for an official podcast called Polycast, the official podcast of a Polton Civilization site where we're dedicated to the continuing coverage of Civ and its related computer games. So I thought perhaps that you had left a message... For us, perhaps you were a Civ fan, because you see, we've never had anybody call into the show, so when there was a voicemail message, my name is Dan, by the way, I'm one of the co-hosts, and there was a message, and I thought, oh, someone finally called in to our show, and then it looked like the wrong number. I thought perhaps maybe you were a Civ fan, just by coincidence.
No, I must just have a wrong number, mate. Sorry, where are you from? Where are you based?
Oh, no, that's all right. I'm in Canada, actually.
I'm sorry, mate, that's like... Yeah, well, I've got that number then.
Oh, no, see, that's quite all right. See, we have, for the show, we have a number based in North America, and we also have a European-based number that's in London. You see, 7659, the last 4 digits, spells poly, like polycast. So...
What?
I guess it was just one of those coincidence things, and I said I thought perhaps maybe you were a Civ fan, because then I could say, hey, you could tune into the show, but I guess not.
What show do you do?
It's called Polycast. It's on
on the internet, is it?
Yes, it's on the internet. It's at polycast.apolitan.net.
Oh, right. Right, yeah. Sorry, it's just a really bizarre mistake, actually.
Oh no, that's not a problem at all. I just wanted to call you back and say, you know, that person hasn't called me back yet. I wonder what's going on. So
I just must have just had a wrong number then.
Oh,
sorry about that, Michael.
Oh, there's no reason to apologize, and I hope you get a hold of the real Martin and get your mobile number for Cedric, and perhaps you'll check out Polycast at some point.
Okay, mate. All right, thank you.
What'd you think, Blake? Is that funny or just pathetic or somewhere in between?
Pathetic.
Oh.
Just pathetic. Sorry, that's true. But it's funny in a pathetic way. Pathetic in a funny way.
Well, that's okay then. I'll take it. Yeah. He could have just hung up.
Damn. He had nothing better to do. You called?
Number 6 from episode 19. The Wrong to Right Number Saga continues.
Message.
Hi, Martin. I'm trying to get hold of you. I'm not sure if it's the right number or not. Perhaps you could give me a ring and confirm this. Give us a call, your dog. It'll be nice to hear from you. You know I'm lucky with numbers. I always get confused. Anyway, give us a call, right? Cheers, Pat.
Is this Cedric?
It is.
Hey, Cedric, you old dog, how are you?
Who's that?
Well, I know you're looking for Martin, but unfortunately you got the wrong number.
Okay.
You phoned yesterday and again today, and I tried to get back to you yesterday, but I think I called you a little late.
Ah, right, good man. You want to call me one of the morning. Okay,
I'm sorry about that. You probably wanted to throw your mobile across the room, right?
No. I just wondered if it was. I couldn't work out who gave me a call. But thanks for calling back. So I called the wrong number, didn't I, last night?
Yes, you did. I'm calling from Canada. What you did is you called Polycast, which is the official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site. I don't suppose you're a Civilization fan, perchance.
Civilization?
Yeah, a computer game.
No, I don't do computer games, no.
Oh, because you know, back in February, Clayton called.
Clayton?
This number as well, also looking for Martin.
Clayton, I know Clayton, he's a good friend of mine. Well, Clayton. Small world. Yeah, I think Martin is a friend of ours in Spain. He lives in Spain. And I've actually managed to ring him this morning, so I'm not quite sure. I wonder if there's a difference in the numbers. But he's a mutual friend of ours who lives in Spain now. Nice job.
Oh, okay. Because I was saying, I hope you actually got a hold of Martin, and I hope Buck Clayton was able to get a hold of Martin.
Yes, I don't know about that, but I showed him how to go over this morning, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, perhaps Martin could call our number now, then we could complete... Yeah, we could complete the cycle, and I thought not only I'd phone back to let you know that you had the wrong number, but to see if perhaps you were a Civ fan, and then you could tune into our show.
Let me just double check, actually. Why are you here? I'll just double check the number I have, because I don't understand how it could have gone. What I have is 7659.
Okay, we have 27871 7659.
Say that again. 24.
27871 7659.
Right, okay, I've got it. I've missed it because mine is. So what happens last night is I missed.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, there's what happened.
That is why I got your number. It's a phone number, except for one. There you go.
That's all right. Our voicemail gets lonely sometimes.
Well, at least we've got one anyway.
Yeah, you see, our number ends in 7659, which is Poly, which is short for Polycast. So anyway, next time you're talking to Martin, tell him to give us a ring so I can call him.
I will be. I will tell you straight. He rushed you to ring me back in a minute now. I thought he was going to do it, so I'll tell him. I'll tell him you're showing under with someone in Canada. You don't know. He might be interested in your computer games. I don't know. It might be. I don't know. That's it.
Oh, well, it'd be great to hear from him, because then we can complete this three-part story. Because, you know, as I said, it was Clayton who called, and that was back in February.
Right, okay, yeah. Well, that's my friend Clayton actually called me out of the blue 2 days ago, and he was in a dire situation. He was... That's quite a coincidence, really, in a way. But, yeah, I will definitely tell him, and then, no, you share the same numbers, minus one...
No worries, I just wanted to let you know, especially when I got your message this morning saying that you were still looking for him, because I said I called last night and then I realized, oh yeah, the time zone difference.
Yeah, that's cool. No, that's fine, that's great actually, because I know who it was, but I've been wondering that all day actually, who'd been calling last night. So yeah, that's cool. There it is. Nice talking to you.
Well, you have a good day there, Cedric. Okay. All right.
Take care of yourself. Nice one, mate. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Number 10 from episode 26.
Goes without saying, ironclads. We've talked about that before.
Yeah, those are.
Yeah. Someone says they like ironclads. Let's make fun of them.
Insert generic mocking here.
Number 9 from episode 16.
The moans about vassal states and about how, oh, working more in favor of the AI. And so that was, yeah, that Kekermezi, and then JB concurs saying that,
right.
Oh, I like to leave an enemy with a few cities, make peace, but then find out they become a vassal of a powerful neighbor and they're a friend, and the only way to finish the job involves complication galore. Well, I guess I'm going to have to be as blunt as the initial criticism. Stop your bitching and adapt.
Number 8. From episode 13.
So now, Wouter, in 5 sentences or less, can you summarize all that you said?
I don't even remember what I said. This is more than a year ago.
People who can't do the math.
I can summarize for him. It depends.
Number 7. Another entry from episode 26.
Fixed bug where the three gorges dam, which is spelled D-A-M-N.
All right. Good job.
The dam.
Oh, it's like three gorges. Damn, someone else built it before I did.
Have you been watching my games?
Number 6 from episode 1.
Now, we didn't notice in preparation for that pilot where we originally talked about the BAFTA war process, but there was another Civ title in the running. Did you see that at the very bottom of the page? The handheld Civ title on the N-Gage was in the running.
Ooh.
For the very self-important sounding The Gamers Award. Excuse me. Touch of something there.
Was that a BAFTA award in your throat?
Number 5 from episode 14. Not the first top 10 list on the show, but is one that ranked what if human players had diplomatic modifiers carries over well.
Human players had diplomatic modifiers?
Why not?
This was a Mackie article, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Yeah, you sit there all the time. They have -4 because you're a heathen religion. Well, somebody started a topic over on Civ Fanatics. Well, what if you could have modifiers against them? You know, like somebody starts out with, although I think this is a little much, but -99, you pillaged our improvement. There's all sorts of ones in here. Like somebody who wants +10 for the good-looking female leaders.
Okay.
Okay, but what does it do? Because your actions are completely unconstrained versus the AIs, which are determined by those modifiers. So they're just there for looks, basically?
Yeah, well, it's not a mod. You mentally add up these points in your head. It's just not shown on the screen. Somebody's saying, if I could show them on the screen, well, this is what I would have.
I didn't see a point. If the diplomacy actually modifiers actually did anything for the game other than just affect how much the AI likes to backstab you, like it affected war weariness, maybe, that's what I think would be cool. And then there would actually be a point.
That is somewhat interesting. I mean, you know, it'd have to be seen very balanced out, and it might take a lot of time to decide, say, how much you stole my city placement would be worth. And having the AI recognize that you stole my city placement. It's a good idea, but I'm not sure how practical it would be and how it would work. Or I like your land.
It's not supposed to be practical.
I like everyone's land.
I found a practical use for the list. I think this thread, after skimming through it quickly, I decided this is a prime candidate for another top 10.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. Everyone blame Mackie. Yeah.
Already have.
From K-Bert, at minus 10, you backstabbed me in a previous game. I think we can all relate to that.
Yes.
We keep forgetting this isn't visual. You can't hear the marbles in our head nodding.
Number 9 from Skippy T. This point generated some conversation afterwards. Plus 10, oh sexy lady, to Isabella, Catherine, and Louis the 14th.
Louis the 14th.
Yeah, okay then.
Is he going to slap me too?
Maybe with a musketeer I'll slap you.
That's right, I did talk about your wig in a very lavish way.
Is that a word?
Indeed it is.
In the Imran dictionary.
Lavicious, yeah.
The Imraninary?
Moving on quickly. From EcoFarm, minus 4, you put a crappy little ice city on my continent.
Only minus 4?
That should be minus 300.
Just consider it a free experience.
You kids, get off my ski resort.
Also from EcoFarm, the only one with 2 on this list. Plus 3, you converted to my religion after a single missionary.
Yeah.
That's always nice.
He must be very...
persuasive?
Yeah.
Number 6, minus 20. Hey, that was my goody hut! From G-Man.
So many times.
Especially that one you just kind of leave behind because you figure your cultural border is going to pop it for you for free. And then...
Number 5, minus 5. You stole my city placement! From Lord Oleus, which we kind of touched upon already.
Yeah, not high enough of a minus.
So, number 4, minus 100. You just lucked out and killed my 3 attackers with 1 archer. From Rabbit Veggie.
Yeah, I think some people in the multiplayer game I was in last week could relate to that one. Of course, in that case, it was my catches, but anyway.
Number 3, plus 4, from Captain 2. It's a hell of a long march to your capital. Number 2, minus 2, from Onagan. You expand to my borders instead of the other direction.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, that kind of makes them easier to conquer sometimes, but yeah.
Yeah, but when there's 2 of you on an island, you're opposite ends of the island, and they decide to put their second city, like, right next to you, it's like, hello.
They just want to get to know you, Mackie. Getting to know you, getting to... Okay.
I think they want to get to know my axeman.
Oh, I could say something, but I'll try to be good for once. And number 1, from Surser88, minus 5. I am annoyed that you cannot get over the insert any bad event that happened 2,000 years ago. Talk about holding a grudge.
Well, but the AI can't hold a grudge for 2,000 years, but I can hold a grudge across several games.
That's true. We all have a grudge against Montezuma.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty long grudge, don't you think? 4,000 years of pop versus playing him how many times? So, it's a 50 million year grudge.
The infinite grudge of, oh, it's you. You need to die.
I got 2 honorable mentions. They kind of almost got into the top 10 list, but I couldn't have a top 12 list. That would just be silly.
Silliness.
I like the negative modifier on this one. Minus 80 million. This is the 10th time you've asked me to declare war on my best friend. Do it again, and you get a wedgie. From BigGamer132. And from Swedish Guy, plus 2, you're a bunch of polygons. That amuses me.
The wedgie shaped like a nuclear missile.
He's not talking about us, is he?
Nobody's talking about us, Emery.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Leonard Nimoy is wise.
Reminds me, too, of the mod I made where I could actually have a trait give you a diplomacy modifier with all the other civs, so they would just like you or hate you because of your trait. That was actually kind of cool. But it would be absolutely useless in multiplayer. So.
Negative 50. You used leet speak on me. Stop that.
Key?
multiplayer. Negative 99, you're still in the game.
I'll own you anyway.
This can segue into our next modcast topic. Moments you just really give up. Yeah, that's about now for this one.
Yeah.
Number 4, from episode 7. The connection between civilization and its use in education endures.
Civ 4, great as educational game or not. An article on TG Daily writes that educating kids with video games is a laudable but doomed idea. Civilization 4 is one of the educational games mentioned. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I thought the article was excellent. Written by Wolfgang Gruner. Gosh, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. So I'm not going to dissect this article bit by bit, but he hits the nail on the head. In this part, I especially like saying, quote, Civilization 4 is educational as it is, but you could quite easily modify it to be even more so, bringing the Civilopedia to the fore. Even though I think he spells Civilopedia wrong. Explain more about the history of technologies whilst kids are researching them. Explain the basics of trade, industry, and diplomacy as they play. I don't know what you guys thought of the article, but I found myself nodding in agreement more places than not.
By and large, I did the same. He makes a lot of good points. Yeah, I personally think you say towards the end, I didn't read the entire thing, I think. You say Civ 4 is a good educational game, according to him?
Yes, Civilization 4 is educational as it is, but then he talks about bringing the Civilopedia, what, you know, move beyond just the content of the game and actually delve into the information that's there and then deal with that separately or in conjunction with them actually playing the game.
Yeah, he has a point with the Civilopedia as a good source to learn. But by and large, I don't think Civ 4 is terribly educational. It's such an incredibly butchered up, simplified version of history. You don't really learn a lot about how the world worked 500 years ago.
No.
I don't think that's really true. That's what a lot of educational games of educators are claiming. It's a great game to learn about history, but that's just not true.
Except if you got some of the scenarios that people come up with both here and over on CFC, they put a lot of research into the history and they try to set it up as best they can in the game. So if you, instead of just giving them dry facts about a certain battle, you could let them try and reenact the battle. That might actually
that is
make
true.
It stick more in their head than just
yes.
normal, you know, they fought this battle, they went up this hill, blah, 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 you know.
Yes, yeah, so actually have them play a scenario, not just kind of a free-for-all.
Right.
What I've been thinking about is actually to make school children make their own scenarios, because I think that would be very educational, to really dive into history, what happened,
yes.
and how can you translate that to a game.
Do the research.
I think I think that would be very educational. Playing scenarios is also a good point. You could learn something from that, but you could learn a lot more if you actually made scenarios yourself. And you could also couple that with an IT class, so you learn two things at the same time.
Yeah.
History and IT.
Kids are a lot smarter about computers than they were even 5 or 10 years ago, so they could probably handle this.
Oh, yeah. Some of the best scenario makers for Civ 2 and also Call to Power were 12, 13-year-old kids. And I started modding the game when I was 16, so there's no reason kids can't do that. The smarter ones, anyway.
Yeah.
Some people that...
Yeah.
But the kids that are that have some skills in that department, you can make use of that.
And another great thing is, of course, I would think that most of the kids, even if they didn't play Civilization, they probably would have heard of it, or they would have heard of SimCity, and they would actually enjoy playing it. And while they're playing it, not think, I'm playing an educational game. This is so dull. Why would I even bother?
He makes that point in the article
that
most of the education games are so boring. Even littler kids playing are going, this is so dumb.
That's absolutely true, but... Again, the problem with Civ 4 is it's fun, but it's in itself not all that educational, so that kind of defeats the purpose.
Yes, I think it would be very tempting to just load up Civ and say, okay, guys, just this and this, and you know, not have any kind of structure. They can easily get very lost down the beaten path. Besides, you know, doing well to incorporate it into the curriculum, whatever your curriculum happens to be, there is also the issue of actually getting the game on the computer and how much is that going to cost. And what's the licensing?
That's a big issue for a lot of schools.
Yeah, the budgets both here and I think elsewhere are not so great sometimes about allowing for computer things.
Right, and are there even if you were able to get the game licensed, you know, at a decent price, which I'm sure is very possible, what about the computers themselves? Are they going to be able to run it?
Well, I don't know how it works in the US and Canada, but I think here in the Netherlands that should be possible, technically, anyway. PCs are not state-of-the-art, but Civ 4 doesn't require the highest standards. I don't know how it works in the US and Canada.
In the U.S., in the larger urban areas, you probably wouldn't have a problem. But when you, if you were trying to do it some small town, you know, in the middle of somewhere, it might be a problem because they might have a lot older ones. I think a lot of our education gets the hand-me-downs. So
yes, yes. Yeah. Canada, very similar, yes. Varies from province to province and urban and rural from province to province as well. But as a great generalization anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's probably to an extent true here as well, except that we don't have as much countryside, small country, so.
The only thing that I probably would get on Wolfgang here is not about what you're talking about, Civ, but you talk smack about where in the world is Carmen Sandiego, and that has to stop, okay, Wolfgang? That was a great television show. Those are great games, okay? If you're listening, Wolfgang, bring it on.
See, that was the more fun kind that kids would actually play.
I love that.
I've
it was
never
easy
heard
for me. I knew my geography well.
You never heard of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Oh,
nope.
Or Where in History is Carmen Sandiego? For
no
shame.
Ooh. I think that's an English language kind of thing.
Ooh.
Yes, it Especially is.
Especially if you say it's history and geography based. American history is not really all that important in the Netherlands.
Well, no, it was world history, too.
Oh, okay.
It was, yes. Yes, and you'd fly all around the world.
Okay. Well, yeah. We have our own TV programs to do similar things, I would expect. I don't know exactly what it does, of course.
Number 3, from episode 4. The first and only instance of the theater's segment's initial premise, reading Civ-based stories by fans.
Reading of the Civilization 3 story Myron vs. the Volcano by Jeremy 2.0. The narrator is Makalua, the king, Dan Q, and featuring Imran Siddiqui as Myron.
Myron Cartwright had dreamed for years of visiting all the world's most faraway places, a vision he had to admit never involved being sacrificed to an active volcano.
I don't suppose there's any room for negotiation here.
He asked, swinging beneath a bamboo pole carried by four hefty native men in broadleaf clothing. Their king, distinguishable only by a faded Air Jordan t-shirt, shook his head.
You show up and the volcano erupts. Seems pretty straightforward to me.
Myron stumbled for a response, in no small part to the starting realization that the native king spoke impressive English.
Oh, okay. I admit an unfortunate confluence of events, but surely you can't believe one led to the other.
You're not the one with a house in the path of an act of lava flow. I'll grant you the science is a little shaky, but you can't really blame us for taking the chance, right?
You won't think less of me for blaming the living out of you, I presume.
Don't sweat it.
They drew as close to the top of the volcano as they dared. Smoke billowed from dozens of fissures splitting the surface of the cone. Brilliant streaks of red-hot magma formed lines around them, spitting molten rock into the air. Deep rumble from beneath their feet echoed in their ears. The king put his hands on his hips and looked perplexed.
Too bad we can't get closer to the crater. Shame, really.
King surveyed the area thoughtfully.
I wonder if stuffing you into one of these lava cracks would satisfy our gods.
I know this isn't the time or place, but technically it's still called magma until it reaches the surface.
He shrugged as much as the vines binding him to the pole would allow.
Sue me. I was pre-law at Berkeley, not geology.
He gestured at the four men bearing Myron and pointed to a gaping hole spouting smoke and ash.
Wait, you went to college and still believe in volcanic sacrifice?
You got something against diversity? What the kind of school did you go to?
But I'm not a virgin. You're supposed to sacrifice a virgin, aren't you? I'll mess things up with you for you and your gods.
Oh, I always thought that virgin thing was overrated. If we had to wait around for virgins, this place would have been wiped off the face of the earth years ago.
The four bearers began to swing Myron in unison, hoping to heave him into the fissure without singeing their saris off.
My father's a powerful man. He'll send people to look for me.
The king held up a hand to stop his men and walked closer to Myron.
Your dad's in the army or something?
Not exactly.
Well?
Myron cleared his throat.
He owns a winery in California. He supplies the whole country with some of the finest vintages in the world.
The king thought about this for a few seconds.
Which winery?
Myron told him.
Well, why didn't you say so before?
5 days later, Myron and the king stood near the top of the volcano once more. An even dozen empty wine bottles were scattered across the ground as Myron uncorked another and began pouring it onto the ground.
You know, this may be the weirdest thing I've ever done.
You're just lucky I went to school not too far from Napa. Besides, is this any weirder than cutting down a perfectly good tree and sticking it in your living room every December? We can always go back to Plan A if you prefer.
No thanks. I just hope your gods appreciate a good Pinot Noir.
Can you stop pouring long enough to try a small sip from the bottle?
I'm sure they do. I just hope they don't mind if there are a few bottles missing from the case.
Number 2, from episode 20. Even now in Civ, we still ask, what is playing morally? And moreover, what of it?
Playing morally. Thousand Young from CFC made this thread. An example of playing morally is playing without no slavery, no slavery whip, emancipation as quickly as possible, which I think is one of the worst civics in the game, but playing without backstabbing anybody or pillaging raising cities, playing like you are, you know, a true heroic firing leader that people will look up to.
Yeah, meh. Heroism is overrated.
He's an evil overlord.
Exactly.
It's a game. Whatever.
I want to kill and maim and plunder.
And besides, the time of when you get slavery, slavery was around all over the place. It was moral at the time. So therefore...
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't care.
Well, it took me a long time to even want to use slavery, just because in previous Civs, I hadn't really used it, but it's really powerful in Civ 4. Mm. It took me playing a scenario type thing that somebody else set up to me to see how powerful that was, and it's actually a good tool, and sort of get my head past the idea that, oh my god, slavery, I can't do this to people.
An example of playing morally is a non-violent Gandhi type strategy, in which it's actually an article, if you will, in which the user plays as Gandhi, playing a game without any military units at all.
Huh.
Yeah.
Gee.
Hylerian, Monarch, a normal speed, standard size Pangaea map. He had 6 opponents, Catherine Victoria, Cyrus Washington, Peter and Mansa Musa, and he did win a diplomatic victory in 1856. He says, it looks like stable relationships can be made with the AI, at least with those I had to face in this game, which I think we can relate to who's your favorite ally, because we have Cyrus on that list, and Washington, and Mansa Musa.
Yes.
Yeah, he didn't have a real warmonger on there.
They're all the same group, yes. He must have been playing without barbarians, because if he was playing with barbs, he would have been wiped out before AD.
Yeah.
We actually touched upon a bit this in episode 7 with Mackie, myself, and Dolphin again. Jeez, we're mentioning him. And I indicated that I supported, if you're in the early game and the higher difficulty levels and you're being threatened, slavery was extremely important. Dolphin notes it's a good form of population control as well, which some people said it was great to whip those unhappy people to death.
Exactly.
We've mentioned that before.
Yes, that's a good strategy.
At the same time, I think a lot of people are getting hung up on whipping because of your moral concerns about whipping. We mentioned in the past about it being completely acceptable and the difficulty of applying our present-day attitudes to times which we did not live in and did not experience. And we've also talked about in the past about how, oh, Civ should be more like reality. And then we talk about, well, when it's reality versus gameplay and fun, sometimes they don't match. So since Civ is not always based in reality, and in many respects it's not, what we would consider moral in real life should not necessarily equate what we consider moral in the game. Unless you like losing on higher difficulty levels. You like that?
I totally agree.
In a modern era thing, I did in the first Civ, but I haven't since then. I never use nukes. I know they're really powerful, but I just can't do it. I mean, maybe that's just me. Maybe because I grew up through Reagan and the Cold War era, but I can't do it. I think I've seen war games or something too many times. It's scary to me.
I think nukes are too darn expensive. I'd rather build something else than take all that time to build a nuke, which I'd probably just sit in my city anyway.
Well, then you'll be happy with the introduction of ICBMs and beyond the sword, then. You'll have another option other than nukes.
Yay! The next thing here is quite interesting. It's another example of how to play morally. I think it's better than the Gandhi example. It's called the Honorable French. And there's actually 12 different rules you have to play by here. Some of them are you're allowed to sign defensive pacts, but every civ has a right to defend itself, but you're not allowed to be police state, a vassalage, a theocracy. You must adopt emancipation and stay there. If a friendly civ requests your aid, you can join them. You may not choose to raise any cities. Giving away cities is only honorable if they are given to an ally who owned them when the war began. You must do all in your power to feed the people. No starvation, that means also no slavery. And it just goes on and on, different examples, like no pillaging, your spies don't do counter-espionage. It's basically rules how to play morally, and you have to stay by it the whole game.
Yeah, there was that list, and which I think for the, you know, the purpose of game, that's fun, and that's a different way to try to play. But of course, some of those, again, on the higher difficulty levels, you might be saying, well, it might be easier to do that in a multiplayer game if everyone agreed to that, as opposed to with the AI, because it might be difficult to communicate that to the AI. Another list that another user posted, based on international law, as he says, propagated by the United Nations, but he talks about there being some very similar points about switching to all UN global civics when possible, not just emancipation, for instance, with you also got no city raising, no pillaging of improvements except strategic resources and roads, which was odd. No attacking workers and settlers, must not build Manhattan Project. My least favorite one, however, is no inciting wars between third parties. Oh, man. Whereas trade embargoes and closed borders are okay. Both lists are very similar, but I think what Ian was mentioning in terms of the honorable French, I think that's a little more fleshed out and a little more specific to the game, but at the same time, it's not something that I would play with consistently. Probably because I couldn't remember all these rules.
Yes, I don't think I'd ever play this way.
Kind of boring to me.
Yeah.
I mean, no war, no diplomacy, what on hell can
this
you?
This thing makes me mad.
You're just sitting there clicking next turn, next turn, next turn.
I'm going to start whipping people in my next game just because I'm pissed at this suggestion.
Number 5 from episode 20.
We've also gained new listener, Mathos, who apparently was looking forward to getting home and listening to episode 19 last time.
He says, oh, the episode was really good. I had to get used to the more relaxed environment. I was expecting a more professional show, but I guess since it's a group of gamers, that was...
Yeah. You're clearly the boss.
That was a silly expectation.
Number 4, from episode 28.
We have Daniel Quick, can't stop talking. We have Imru, Wilder, and who has been it with us for a while.
Oh, cheater.
Makalula, is that right?
There you go. Yes.
We just call her Maki. Mm-hmm.
Call her girl playing Civ.
No. I mean, I am, but no.
Number 3. From episode 32.
Well, I hope I haven't jumped the gun there.
We like that type of initiative. That's why I talk so much. No one else wants to.
No one else gets a chance to.
That was good, Lee. Only Mackie is annoyed because she loves the modcast.
No, I'm not.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Dan is always trying to create controversy where there is none. Sheesh.
One big happy family, hey?
Well, we try. Well, sort of.
We are family.
Yeah. One big dysfunctional family, maybe.
Dysfunctional, yes. We put the fun in dysfunctional.
Number 2 from episode 24.
Welcome to the 24th edition of Polycast, the official podcast of Polton Civilization site. We tried to get 100% less Dan Q, but unfortunately he's a hard bugger to get rid of. Joining me is the named Dan Q, unfortunately. Don't tell him, we're going to knock him off after the show. Say hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Honorable mention the second from episode 14.
From Kbert at minus 10, you backstabbed me in a previous game. I think we can all relate to that.
Yes.
We keep forgetting this isn't visual. You can't hear the marbles in our head nodding.
Honorable mention the first from episode 18.
New leaders. America, we have Lincoln, charismatic and philosophical. Celtic, Boudica, aggressive and charismatic. The French one, de Gaulle, Charles de Gaulle, charismatic and industrious. Charismatic? Is pompous or meddler not a trait?
Number 1, from episode 5, artificial intelligence difficulties is a truly timeless concern in the Civilization series, and this was the first instance of it being discussed on the show.
Well, this actually really related to a question that I had, which was in Civ 4, and actually in most of Civ, it seems, when you go to harder difficulty levels, all it does is give the AI bonuses. It makes them play under rules the humans don't. And there seemed to be a really good discussion on how could you make the AI a better player rather than giving them bonuses so they can play under the same rules, but it can actually be a decent match.
Make them human. Oh, wait, we haven't reached that level of technology yet. I'm out of ideas.
Yes, we do. It's called multiplayer.
True, true. The multiplayer is a lot more of a hassle to try and play when you just want to go and have a quick game.
That's definitely true.
Actually, I think Blake needs some congratulations for all the work he's done. It does seem that he's got some quite amazing stuff he's managed to do to the AI to make it play towards that level.
Yes, it's very impressive. Can't say I've tried it very extensively, but it does look good, and people are very happy with it. People are better at this game than me, so...
Mm-hmm.
I still feel like such a newbie to Civ 4.
That's okay. You can join my club.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose with all the poly stuff, you probably don't have much time to actually play it anymore.
It's been that way for 10 years?
And finally, number one from episode 33.
Oh, Mackie, you came and did Polycast.
Oh. No, not with the Barry Manilow. And also, not with the singing. We've been over that.
That wasn't really singing, Mackie, so I'm okay.
Wait a second.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Thank you for listening to Polycast Evergreen, Season 1. I'm Wouter Locutus Snyders. Resistance was futile.
Civilization 1 clips, copyright MicroProse.
Civilization 4 sound clips, copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.